Hey, we're here with the Urban Pitch Podcast, The Beautiful Game of Life. My name is Brian Jordan, and I'm here with someone I share a deep bond with, Jordan O'Brien. Basically, my name backwards, and
exactly.
Vice versa. Here. Mm-hmm. We share that common bond. I think we met through Mo Ali.
We sure did.
Correct.
Back in the day.
Yeah, and since then, we've gotten to play a bit of futsal together. Mm-hmm. A very skilled and talented player. Technical. More
Hiding
technical
me
than
up.
Me. She is. She's played from you, born in California.
Yeah, born in California.
Played here. She's played all over the world. Iceland, Italy.
I could name off the list of all the places. Literally, it's a majority of Europe, and then like some random other places for nonprofits, and then like some tango stuff
tango
here and there,
league.
And then professionally.
Professionally, down most recently in River.
Oh yeah. Pool? Oh, and Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tons of stuff, and while I mention all of that, you know, Champions League experience, we got the whole thing here. So what I want to do right away is I'd love for as long or as short of a whole breakdown from youth and everything, because I know a lot of kids will be excited to hear what your experience was growing up in California and all that. So, and I'm very interested. Treat me like a dummy. Teach me.
Okay, here we go. So I started playing when I was 3 years old, and what inspired me to start playing was my older brother. I have an older brother. His name's Kyle O'Brien. He's currently playing in NISA for Cal United. I mean, he's injured right now, so he's coming back from an injury. But yeah, he inspired me to play. I watched him play, and I watched my dad play as well. My family was always really involved in soccer. So yeah, so pretty much I was primed from birth that I was going to play soccer. And yeah, so growing up, I started playing at this place called Garden Grove Arena, and I played with boys and girls, and then I also played for a team in Anaheim, I believe it was, and it was called Cosmos, and that was my brother's team, and so I was like, I need to play on this team, and of course, and I think I was the only girl playing on that team, but yeah, so actually, I think Christian Ramirez was on that team,
too.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, played with them growing up and then started at a small like AYSO team. I think it was called Gold Rush. Yeah. Then after that, I transitioned into a team called Anaheim Soccer Club ASC, where my dad was the coach. And I was playing up 1 year with a bunch of super talented women and at the time, and then I made the transition over to like one of our rival clubs, which it was our rival club at the time, and everybody dreaded them, everybody hated them, and I hated them too at the time, for the record, but I became a part of them, so then I guess I became the hated.
Yeah.
But it was Slammers FC in Newport Beach.
Yeah.
And so then at that time I stepped away from my dad's team. My dad's team came over and they went up to play their regular age group, and I would play on loan occasionally, but they made me play my age group, and I was so mad. I literally cannot tell you how mad I was, but I was so angry that they forced me to play my own age group. I like cried about it all the time, and like after every game.
And why was that?
Exactly. Why was that? Because the team that was my age group at Slammers was the best team in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, Jordan, like, this is a good opportunity for you. And I was like, come on, like, okay, why can't I just stay with like my friends? And like, as my dad is a coach, he yelled at me all the time, but like, obviously as my dad,
yeah.
I like expect nothing less from him. But yeah, I went down to that team. I cried after a bunch of games, and the coach was George Larson.
Okay.
And he I don't know if he's coaching anymore at Slammers, but I know he had a couple teams in the past. And probably still has a team, as far as my knowledge. But yeah, eventually I accepted it, and I like fully submersed myself in the team, became my best friends on that team.
Mm-hmm.
We took the state title 6 years in a row. Like,
wow.
I mean, yeah, it was
wow.
It was crazy. I mean, it was a really, really good decision for
yeah.
me, and that our team was constantly number one. So, yeah, there was a lot of pressure in regards to that, but it was good.
Yeah.
So yeah, playing at Slammers was an amazing experience. Then found myself in the whole like going to college, like checking out universities, and I had no idea that that was the purpose of like playing in youth.
Okay.
A lot of people are like told that all the time, like, oh, go to college. Mm-hmm. Mia's like, I'm gonna go play pro. But
so you didn't necessarily see the straight line as being through college and get drafted or anything like that. It was more of just like, you know, you wanted to play.
I knew I wanted to play. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And then I was like, okay, well, I can go to university and I guess I can study something, but I'm going to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly in my process throughout college. I changed majors 4 times. Okay. It was crazy. I eventually finished my 5th year and ended up with my degree. I was supposed to get a certificate in advertising, but one class prevented me from doing that. But I went to University of Tulsa in Oklahoma.
Yes.
That's where I ended up committing to. Went there for 4 years. My 5th year, I didn't play, but I was like training, playing pickup with our men's team because our men's team's really good. So after that, I knew I wanted to play professionally. My first opportunity was at Houston Dash, so I went to Houston.
Well, before you jump into pro, yeah, I want to touch on a few things. So okay, how much older did you say your brother was?
My brother's 2.5 years older.
2.5 years. And so as
I'm 27, he's 29.
Okay.
Yeah, 29 right now.
And so as far as influence, would you say that was a big influence of why you eventually or originally wanted to jump into the sport? Because it sounds like your family really supported.
Absolutely. And it's always a competition between me and my brother. Like, if he was doing something, I was going to do it, and I was going to do it better than him or just as good as him. Or, like, every single time, like, we would, in front of my house, I thought we had a huge front yard, by the way. We didn't.
Okay.
We didn't at all. But we had cement, and we had pug goals, and we had skates, okay, and we had, like, hockey sticks, and we have, like, we'd create some weird games. So, mm-hmm, like, we'd be, like, on skates kicking a soccer ball,
sure,
like, with the pug goals, and it was super, like, obviously me and him,
yeah,
being kind of close in age, we'd be playing, and he does not lose. Like, he,
okay,
he cannot lose.
Sure.
I'm always cheating, apparently,
okay,
according to him. But yeah, throughout all of my life, it's always been like kind of like a competition, but always like, I mean, 100%, he's always been like my inspiration in regards to things because of his level of dedication to the,
sure,
game. It's crazy.
Sure. And this I can attest to because I've played with you in futsal,
mm-hmm,
and they've often been on similar teams together. And,
oh, goodness,
you know,
gracious,
if coming as a pro, coming into like a futsal game, like I'm trying to get after it, but maybe just like a little hold back, right?
Yeah.
But her and her brother,
no,
just not coming into it that way. And sometimes I fall into that category, but they're having competition, trying to score more goals than the other one, and they're just battering teams up. And I
have no words for playing with my brother because we'll literally get into it on the field.
Yeah,
he'll yell at me. He's like, "Why did you play that ball?" And
sure,
I'm like, "Well, I thought that the I have to explain everything that I'm doing."
Yeah,
and he's like, "Well, that was a terrible decision. Why did you?" I'm like, "I literally can't talk to you." I was like, "Go get out, please get off the field. I can't."
Sure.
I can't play with him. Somebody sub him, please, because I can't handle him anymore.
And then also, you said playing under your dad. I had a similar experience. How did you find that? And what was the biggest difference there once you, because it was on the Slammers, was that a different coach then?
Yeah, it was a different
okay,
coach.
Okay.
From my experience with my dad, it was, I mean, of course, he always wants the most out of me.
Sure.
You know, being the coach's kid, I was always dealt with like the most what's it called, I don't know what the word is, but he was always the hardest on me all the time.
Okay.
And so like I was constantly in trouble. If somebody was talking and they were next to me, it was me talking.
Yeah,
which is it's definitely probable that I was talking as well.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Because of who I am, but yeah, so I was always, for me, it was always like I wanted to be the best. I wanted to do the best. I mean, it's my dad, I have to impress my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be the best on the team and everything that I'm doing. And I mean, yeah, I think being with him, it pushed me to want to be my best every
sure,
single game, every single training session, and do extra, do more any opportunity that I had
yeah,
to do so.
I think that's an interesting topic, though, because coming from the youth, I also had my father coaching me,
mm-hmm,
and I think a lot of kids might get that twisted around with it being more easier as the coach's son or daughter, and that's why I really wanted to hit on that topic, because for other kids that might be on teams, I'd say the majority of them aren't the coach's son or daughter,
mm-hmm,
and when they view that, they might feel some kind of way about it, but honestly, it is a lot of pressure into perform, and actually,
absolutely,
they're taking it out a lot on you sometimes.
100%. And then the thing is people fail to realize is like you're going home with them. If everybody has a bad game, you're on that ride home with them. You are hearing about it the whole, whether you want to hear it or not, you are hearing it the whole ride home.
Yeah.
Like it's best to just be silent.
Sure.
Or like if you play bad, you don't talk to him about it.
Yeah.
But he's gonna tell it to you regardless. He's like, you know, you played bad. I'm like, yes, I know. I don't
sure,
need to hear it. I know I played bad. I don't need to talk about it anymore.
So many fights in a car ride home.
Absolutely. I'm like, please stop talking about it. Please stop. And he's like, no, we're talking about it. I was like, come on. And it's like, because we have to drive, like, we drove like more inland, like an hour. It's an hour drive there, an hour drive back. Try to put the headphones in. Well, at the time it was a CD
player. CD player.
Yeah. CD player. With the headphones on the outside that barely blocked any noise. Yeah. Never forget those ride home.
Yeah. Well, were there any, as far as staying in your youth still, was there any people, maybe even players you were looking up to at that time, or would you say your biggest influences were still family-oriented, or what would you say?
I would say I remember, like, growing up.
Coaches? Maybe that you really appreciated?
I mean, 100%, the coach that I went to that I didn't want to go to originally, he... 100, like, changed my game completely, because I mean, I told you, I was so emotional about being there and not wanting to be there and like wanting to play perfect. And then he kind of like broke me down as a player in a positive manner.
Sure.
And like broke me down to like the core of like just like the talent that I was at the time, and then it built me back up to a whole different type of player that was able, because at the time, because I just took criticism from my father, and I wasn't able to take criticism from my coach at the time. And so anytime he would say I was doing something wrong, I would just like break down. And then like, so I was broken down to the point where I was able to take criticism all over again, which is, this is kind of creepy, but like I would take criticism growing up, like my coach would call me out in front of everybody, and I would smile. Like, that's how I would take criticism, is like I would take it with a smile on my face, and I kind of like giggle about it, because sure. I'm like, yeah, he's probably right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And like, and everybody else thought I was crazy because of it. But you can imagine like being like that, and then like going into a different environment. It's not necessarily a good thing, because people think you're not taking them seriously.
Sure.
But it's just how I take criticism
you
now. It's like,
with,
exactly.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you mentioned that, because I'm trying to figure out too. I think it's a very good skill at the youth that sports teaches you in general, but soccer for us,
mm-hmm.
just how to look at yourself and take these criticisms and be able to digest that. Because a lot of adults that I talk to now that maybe didn't get that so early in life,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's difficult for all of them the same, but at the same time, I feel like that's a very big life skill, I think, that you need.
Absolutely.
As a youth.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're not receptive towards that, you can't really change things. You could get stuck in your way, you know, and maybe your way is not necessarily the best way. You always have to look at it from different perspectives, different people.
Yeah.
You know?
And are you even being honest with yourself?
Exactly. No, that's so true. It's actually insane. It's crazy, because even, like, now with, like, the coach that I have at River, I ask him during this break. I'm like, I would like feedback on, like, what I need to do, what I need to improve on. And he, like... He like gave me information on what he thought about what I was doing, and he gave me feedback, right? And I was like, originally I was like not necessarily happy about it, and then I like kind of took a step back out of my feelings, and I was like, you know what, I understand where he's coming from.
Sure.
I understand why I could be perceived in this type of manner, doing this, and so I'm like, okay, like I can change this. This is something I can change when I go back.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So let's leap ahead then. So you go from U Sports, you go to Tulsa. After college, I think you was a psych major?
I was a psych major.
Yeah.
I was a psych, you know.
So did my research, so just trying to prove that to the camera. That
yes.
So after college, just one thing I always hear kids asking me is just like the differences, you know, the leap difference from after college to pro. What was that like? And then experiences on different teams.
I would say it's pretty humbling. It's a humbling experience, because you go from college where, like, I mean, you might be it in your conference, you might be it in your league, you know, like you go from that perspective, and then you jump into a bunch of superstars. Everybody's good, and everybody's coming from a place where they were good, you know? So it's a very different perspective. And then you're going into a whole new environment with like a whole new coach, when before in college you were with the same coach for 4 years, and it's somebody who obviously totally believes in you,
mm-hmm.
and has been like, they wanted you to commit there, and they like want, they want what's best for you, right? So you're it in college, but then you go into, and you're like a nobody all over again. And so you have to prove yourself. It's like a constant, and it's the same as every single team that you go to. It's constantly trying to prove yourself,
it's
and
so
you have
cool.
to prove yourself to the coach. And that's the thing, is like, you can go to a team and have a new coach that doesn't like the way that you play. And it's up to you to either try and change their mind, or you can leave and go somewhere else and try and try and convince another coach, but like the grass isn't always greener on the other side. It's crazy because I had this conversation with one of my friends, Elizabeth Eddy, and I don't think she realizes how much this resonated with me, but I think we had this conversation maybe 3 years ago.
Okay.
And she currently, where does she play right now? She plays at Sky Blue in the NWSL. And I had this conversation with her where like, we were talking and she was like, yeah, like when you find a coach that you like stick with them because they believe in you.
Yeah.
They give you that freedom to be the player that you are, that you're like destined to be. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you go to a team and you're with a coach that doesn't believe in you, it diminishes your faith in yourself. It diminishes your mental, your mindset,
sure.
Everything, you know, it just like, it brings you, it really does. It's really, really draining. And that's why a lot of people end up like quitting in college, in club, in youth and everything. When you're with a coach that doesn't believe in you, the greatest injustice you can do to yourself is stay with that coach, mm-hmm. because they don't see value in you. And then you're going to start not seeing value in yourself unless you have amazing like self-esteem and self-confidence,
sure.
which a lot of people don't have.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So the greatest injustice you can do is staying with that coach. You'd be better off going somewhere else and finding somebody else. And potentially maybe you go somewhere else, the coach loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Then you blossom into this amazing player that you're meant to be.
Sure.
And I think that's like what is really, really important to kind of search for in the environment that like, you go, when you go and play professionally, it's like finding a coach that believes in you.
Yes.
And if they do believe in you, stick with them.
Yeah. So yeah. One note to everybody out there is one thing I've been really hearing with a lot of our stories, just perseverance in general and syncing up maybe with just the right fit. Because
mm-hmm.
what I think a lot of people don't understand about professional sports too, and I'm sure they know this, but the politics behind it in certain places too, and
yeah.
the belief.
Absolutely.
Because you can be that great player.
Yeah.
But if, like you said, someone doesn't believe in you.
Exactly.
How do you
and then and you could end up like giving up way too early in your career. Like there's plenty of players who I've seen just like are done playing, and that like say they like go to a team and they like don't play, and I'm like, they're incredible, how in the world
yeah.
are they not playing? You know, you see the value in them.
Sure.
A lot of other people see the value in them, but the coach that they're with doesn't see the value in them, and then they stick with that place, and then it just their self-belief just goes plummeting down.
Sure.
And it's just, it's so, for me it's really sad, but obviously they decided to stay in that situation for God knows what reason, but like that's their decision.
Well, after you've mentioned that, have you ever been in a situation like that, and how have you, you know, taken that, and how did you persevere through a situation like that if you've been in one?
So yeah, I've been in, I would say I've been in many situations like that, to be honest. My like career has been nothing but trial after trial after trial after trial, and it's been good for me, because I think I have a very positive outlook on life and a positive outlook on like my whole soccer experience in general. And so I've been in that environment where I'm like, I'm on a team, and but I kind of get caught up, you know, like I'm on a team and I get caught up in the fact that, like, for example, NWSL was a really, really tough time for me.
Okay.
Because I didn't realize when I was in it that like it was really, really draining me. It was draining my love for the game. It like, and the reason why we do what we do is because we like to play games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, right? Training is fun and all. Everybody
sure.
loves training. Training's a great time, but like what we love doing is playing. Like
sure.
that's why we do what we do. And if you're only training and you're not getting to play in games, it's really, really, it's a frustrating time, because that's like your release. On
sure.
the field is your release.
Yeah.
And on like certain teams that I was on, I didn't get that opportunity to play.
Yeah.
And I kind of got in a comfort zone where I was like, oh, it's fine. Like, I'm training with like the best in the world.
Yeah.
It's chill. Like, we're fine here. Like, I'm content. But I'm like, that's not enough for me, because like the reason why I play this game is because I love playing.
Yeah.
Being in just like an environment of like incredible players, and when you're not playing, what does that do for you? It doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, you need that game experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like it. And I forgot what it felt like at one point, because I wasn't playing in games. I was just watching games, and or even just sitting on the bench and watching games. I was like, and I took a step back and I was like, what am I doing here?
Sure.
Because I like, maybe if I was in that mindset, I would have signed for another year to stay in the environment that I was in training. And but like why I do what I do is because I like playing. So I thank God that I like figured out a mindset where like was able to take myself out of my comfort zone for a minute and be like, Jordan, you need to move forward with your life. You need to go play somewhere. Yeah. You need to go somewhere where you are more valued, because clearly you're not that valued here. Yeah. But that's hard. That's a hard pill to swallow.
Oh yes.
Yeah, it's very hard, and it's hard to accept the fact that not everything is as perfect as it seems to be. Sure. You know.
Well, take us through this tour professionally then, because I know you've been all over and you've said a little bit about, you know, certain places treat you different than others.
Yep.
But let's hear kind of maybe give us a list of some places you've been and maybe your favorite out of the bunch, whether it's just a memory or, and then give us some situations that are oddball that came up just to that location or not.
Oh me, oh my. Okay, so I mean, at Houston, I really didn't like my experience at Houston. It was difficult for me, really, really difficult for me there, and I was like on the verge of not playing anymore because I hated it that much.
Wow.
And that was, as Houston was in their second year, I didn't think that, like, I don't know, I just didn't think everything was like that great. I didn't think the treatment was great. I didn't, because I was so, at the time, it was during the World Cup,
okay.
And our our national team players, they went and played, mm-hmm. And so I was, so but they changed it this year, where so I was technically an amateur,
okay.
But they changed it this year, so like you could have amateurs that are professionals during the time that, does that make sense? Like
yes.
They get signed for
yes.
the
for
period
that
of time they're gone. Exactly.
Yes.
So when I was there at the time, there was no, it was no signing. I didn't get any money. I received zero payment.
Oh wow.
So I was in Houston, I lost money. I lost a lot of money. And yeah.
So just catch us up. So I was pro here in America as a man, and even I don't know these certain little things about the women's game.
Yeah.
And I think it's important if we wanted to draw attention to that or even try to help lead a helping hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was that situation like? I do remember in the old days of the MLS, they had these little contracts like that. But is that, so that's obviously still going on.
It was a nightmare. For me, it was really, really hard. So when I was at Houston originally, they put me at a host family that was 58 miles away. I will never forget that number. Wow. Because we were 58 miles away.
Yeah.
And there was no traffic, and it took me an hour to get to training every day. And if I didn't have a car, I wouldn't have been able to make it to training. They put me with the host family, and then it was really far away from the airport. During this time, I was actually flying back and forth to Oklahoma, where I went to school, University of Tulsa, to do my classes during the week. So I would like go be at training, and then I would fly back. And yeah, it's...
So you coming in just every weekend?
I would be there. No, I would like... I would fly for the day, fly back.
Wow.
Fly for the day, fly back. Because, yeah, I'm crazy. I'm actually crazy is what I've established.
Was the team actually taken care of?
No, I was taken care of that. I was taken care of that because my education was obviously important to me.
Yeah.
But my dream in life was to play professionally. So yeah, I was flying back and forth. I ended up... The reason why I took a fifth year at Tulsa was to get my... certificate of advertising.
Okay.
I ended up not getting it in the end.
Okay.
And I was flying back. It's crazy. I was flying back and forth, and I did not get it.
Yeah.
Because of two absences, and I had the flu at the beginning of the year, so that was the two absences. But yeah, didn't end up getting it, so all that flying back and forth was pointless. But anyways, proceed. I move forward. Not bitter about it at all, clearly.
We can't tell.
And yeah, so I was flying back and forth, but like the housing situation is they set us up 58, and I was with another woman on the team with me. Her name is Cammie Privet. She's actually there now, but she's like gone away back and forth. She's still at Houston. But we were both living in that situation, and I was just like, how is this? And I put so many miles on my car. Eventually I was like, this is too much. And I ended up like, sleeping on my friend's couch, who was about 20 minutes away from training. So I was sleeping on a couch the majority of the time, the rest of my time. And also that was closer to the airport.
Sure.
So it's easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
But goodness, it was. And the thing is that's the situation, is there was no reward in the end. I didn't play in any of the games. I got rostered, sure, but I didn't get to play. And I was like, this is so defeating and mentally draining. And I was doing the most, actually doing the most.
Yeah.
And I had to make a decision like 6 months into it. And I decided there was an opportunity in Spain. And I was like, I need to get out of here because I hate the game here. This is not fun. This is not fun for me. The only fun part is that I'm surrounded by amazing people on the team, and that's it. And yeah, so I ended up going to Spain.
So Houston was your first experience with it, though?
It was my first experience with it.
Any fun? I like to ask this question because just so much negative stuff happens around it. But any fun rookie experience that you had on top of that where you had to do any kind of thing, like get the balls after practice or anything? Or did you have it light as a rookie?
I think I had it light. I think we all had it light. I think it's just considering the fact of all the stuff that we deal with in regards to women's soccer, especially with Houston in that situation in the second year. It was a lot, and so there was really nothing else that you could do to make it. You didn't need to add anything onto that, exactly, because it was already a pretty big nightmare.
Okay.
For me, it was, at least. It was really mentally defeating. So the opportunity came in Spain on the Canary Islands with UDG Tenerife. So I was, like, super, super stoked about this opportunity. But this was my first... this is my first time abroad.
Yeah.
Well, not my first time abroad playing professionally, or like trying to play professionally. Okay. And I went there and I was there for a month and I'm like in the process of like about to be signed. Everything's going to be great. But like also I'm super homesick. I'm having a very, very, very tough time. My mental state is just like not there. I had a boyfriend at the time. I was like not enjoying, and like I'm a really big beach person, and this is literally the whole island is like it's surrounded by a beach, like I should be in heaven.
So
during that time I was like excited, but I also was like kind of bummed out. I like wasn't really enjoying that moment in the time that I was there because I was constantly feeling like I was missing something else. And it was really difficult as well, considering the fact that everybody only spoke Spanish, and my Spanish was actually a lot worse than it. I mean, now it's better now for the record, but during that time it was like I was really uncomfortable and totally out of my comfort zone, so far away from my family, my friends, my everything, and I didn't enjoy it, and it was hard, and got into a like kind of like a more negative mental space, and then I was like, okay, it's fine, everything's like it'll get better. Excited to sign a contract, and then eventually they ended up like showing me this contract to sign, and I like and signing it, and then turns out the league is not professional, so they can't sign internationals. Like La Liga at the time, La Liga Femenina was not professional, so I can't sign there.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So they can't pay me anything. I can't. There's not like I cannot be there.
And so at this point, you're doing your own contracts.
I'm doing all. I did all preseason with them.
But are you doing your own contracts?
I had like a guy helping me, but I didn't have an agent. It wasn't my agent.
Okay.
It was just me.
Okay.
So
you discover that, and
I discovered that, and I'm like, I obviously have to leave now. Yeah. I can't play. I can't play. Like our first game was against Barca, and like I couldn't play. I had to leave. So I was like, I was so frustrated, angry. I like cried the way home, but I was super bummed out, to say the least. And then I ended up going home. Then I ended up going to, I think I was home for like 6 days or something. Then I went to Australia.
Okay.
I think that's what happened. Hazy timeline.
Yeah.
So I went to Australia, opportunity with a team there, called Melbourne City.
Melbourne City?
Okay. Yeah. And then another opportunity came while I was there with Melbourne Victory. But
yes.
Melbourne City brought me out. So I was like, I'm going to go stick with the team that brought me out, right? But the team that brought me out, they didn't need my position. So I ended up, and I'm a more attacking-oriented player. Mm-hmm. I play forward, I play winger, I play center mid, like all these. I even could probably play outside back. But center back is not my thing.
Sure.
And when I was with City, I was training at center back, which was not fun. And I don't know, I have such loyalty to like somebody that brings me in and like somebody that like treats me well. So it was like, I had loyalty to City even though Victory had a spot. And I kind of disregarded Victory until the last minute when City said they're not signing me. And then so I went and trained with Victory for the following 3 days, and then I didn't end up signing anywhere in Australia, so I ended up returning after 1 month of being in Australia.
Wow.
Yeah.
These are interesting, showing up on spot and just seeing what the opportunity is and then what comes
of it. Well, the thing is, they knew I was a midfielder. It's the crazy part.
So, well, when you ended up switching from City to Victory, Where did they end up training you at for those?
I was playing center mid for Victory. So I was in my comfort zone. Yes. Everything was meshing. And the coach was told me, I mean, he was like, if you would have been here a week earlier, it would have been better for you. And I'm like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding? I decided to stay with City and a week extra because for what? For them not to sign me. And then I go to Victory and then, it was awful. It was really, really rough. Then I went back to the U.S., pretty bummed out, pretty defeated. And then there's an opportunity that came up.
Well, just to touch on that too, just me noticing who you are as a player, I feel like you create so much. This is a very interesting choice to hear that they put you at center back. I do know you're pretty ferocious with tackles too, but maybe because you distribute, why do you think that you fell into that role when you went over there?
Because that was literally the only position that they needed. They only needed a center back. Okay. And I was like, why in the world did I come here for a center back? But I was like, I'm going to do it because I'm here. I'm going to do it to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
But not my thing.
Yeah. I feel like, me personally, I feel like you create so much going forward. How did they do that season? That's what I want to know.
I think City?
Yeah.
City won.
Okay, so they were pretty darn good.
They're awesome. They're really good. And then Victory, I think, ended up in last.
Last place. Yeah. So they could have used
it. So it's exactly. Yeah. They maybe could have put it inside.
Missed out, man.
Exactly. Rough life.
So you come on back to U.S. after that?
I come back to the U.S. Okay. I go to a combine. And at the combine, a team from Sweden was interested and ends up picking me up or whatever. And then I go to Sweden and I meet two awesome roommates. One's from Canada and one's from Utah.
Okay.
And Nora Abelins and Hannah Terry. And I love, they're amazing people. And awesome. Thank God that they were there in the situation with me in Sweden, because I don't think I would have made it without them. So in Sweden, it was a really, really interesting experience because we were at a small club. It's called Kubik. Okay. And we didn't really do well. We weren't doing well. I also ended up getting my first technical, serious injury. I tore my ACL in college.
Okay.
That was one serious injury. And I recovered from that perfectly fine. But at Kubik, I had a high ankle sprain, which I've never experienced in my life because I have really flexible ankles for the most part. And high ankle sprain. We didn't have a trainer. We didn't have a trainer. We had a masseuse, but we didn't have a trainer.
Interesting. So this is what I want to know. From the places that you've played, specific stories like this is what I want to know. Because treatment at each team is going to be different.
Totally different.
So did they just think they didn't need this? Or where they hired the mailman to do this part-time?
No, they're you need to go to this place, specifically. I don't know where the logic is. Because I personally think you need a trainer on staff at all times. Because serious injuries happen every single day.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't, warm up appropriately. And, I don't know where the logic was in this. But, I also don't know, I need to finish the rest of the story. Because I don't know the logic in a lot of the things.
Okay.
So ended up, they ended up taping my ankle.
Okay.
Every single game. I was on crutches during the week. I would go to the game. I would try to play every single week. I would do this same cycle where I'd be on crutches during the week, could not walk. And then I would go and they would tape me up and I would try to play. And in the warm-up, I'd be no, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And after 3 months of being in Sweden, I ended up getting deported because they couldn't figure out my paperwork. Yeah, they said, oh, it's no big deal. We'll be able to sort you out 6 months, no problem. It's Sweden. it didn't work out like that. And the guy that brought me in just wasn't able to do it, and I have no idea why. So I ended up not getting the paperwork, and so I ended up getting deported.
So you sign a contract?
I signed a contract.
Sign a contract into playing, or trying to play, and then
I was playing in Sweden until I got injured.
Yeah.
The final month I was injured.
Oh, got it.
But the first 2 months I was playing, everything was fine.
And then deported.
Deported.
And so what happens with the contract at that point?
I mean, the contract is technically invalid, I guess. I guess you could say. And then I went back and with a rolled ankle. So, I mean.
Oh, yeah, so you told me you had some trials and tribulations, but I wasn't expecting. So now we've visited three countries at this point, it seems like.
Yeah.
And So where do we at first settle in on a team?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I after Sweden with my rolled ankle, I don't really know what to do with a rolled ankle. I never thought rolled ankles were a big deal until it happened.
Sure.
And then I went to Orlando because my boyfriend at the time was playing for City.
Okay.
And I go there and I'm like getting rehab by Pride's. And I like know some people on Pride. I like know a bunch of friends on Pride. One being like my best friend Jamia. So I was like stoked to see like my friends and like kind of hang out a bit and just like kind of enjoy and rehab my ankle and then also get some training in with Pride.
Yeah.
So I like went back and I was training with Pride and I was getting my rehab done on my ankle. And then I signed with a different agent. His name's Lenny. Upper V Agency is who it was, and I signed with him, and he like got me an opportunity in Iceland. Okay. With a team called KR Reykjavik, but I was supposed to go like really quickly, but ended up my paperwork ended up screwing things up, so I ended up going like a month late, so I missed like 3 games or something that I shouldn't have missed.
Okay.
So the first place that I actually settled in was KR Reykjavik in Iceland.
And how'd you enjoy your time there?
I loved it because they had some really talented players. And I got to play with, I think for me, I also love playing with Brazilians. I think I get along really well on the field with Brazilians. Okay. And I think we read each other really well. And I had 2 Brazilians on my team and we like kind of played in like a triangle on like the left side of the field. And it was amazing. It was so much fun. It was a good time. And I was kind of finally like vibing. And there's a few other girls that were like, they're forwards that were just like really, really, really talented. And so it was just like this nice little, I don't know, it was like finally meshing. And I was like, finally, somewhere that like is working. And I'd never been to Iceland before. So it was like a crazy cool experience.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are Brazilian players known to frequent Iceland for some reason? Or is it just that happened to be this team?
It just, I feel like every team that I've like gone to, they always have a Brazilian. Group. Like they always have at least 1 Brazilian for the most part, at least since I've been abroad. But yeah, apparently there was other ones in the leagues, but I didn't see any of them. So yeah.
So out of the teams listed so far, your best experience, what you have to say, is with Reykjavik.
With Reykjavik, okay. For sure.
And so, how long did you end up playing there?
I was there for 4 months.
4 months?
4 months. Isn't that crazy? It's just been so many teams in such a small amount of time.
But is that, how long is a typical season overseas?
Oh my gosh, like I feel like it's 6 to 8 months. 8 months?
Okay.
10 months maybe? Depends on what team you're at, where you're with, like league-wise.
Yeah, because how many teams are in these leagues?
There's a lot. There's definitely a lot.
Are there?
Okay. Yeah, normally there's a lot.
Because when you ended up coming back and playing for the LA Galaxy here.
Yeah.
How many teams are in that league?
Definitely a lot less. I don't really know, though. Maybe 10?
10.
10 or 10? 10 sounds right.
So overseas, as far as the norm of teams-wise,
more. I think in Iceland at the time, it was 12. I think it was 12 teams. Yeah,
that's just so. Maybe. This is so interesting to me to hear the flip-flop of that, and you'd like to think that there was more, I mean, especially with how well our women do, you'd like to think there's more money here for in
soccer
for them.
Oh, absolutely.
So what's that dynamic? Why?
I mean, I feel like in regards to women's soccer, I feel like people struggle to see the value in it. And I mean, you go out to like a women's national team game, it's blatant, it's obvious, it's like right in front of your face. There's clear, like it's, and especially like in the environment that it, like you can see the value in it, that all the people that are there, everybody's supporting, everybody's super excited about it. But I feel like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like the people who create like the teams and everything like that, I feel like they struggle to see the value in it. But like there is incredible value in it. It shows with the fans.
Yeah.
I think that that's like a perfect example, is just like the fans, like that shows how much value something has. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing to acknowledge the fact that there is a market for it, and you have to tap into it appropriately. But obviously if you do things incorrectly, or if you're not seeing the value in it and you're like trying to tap into this market that's not the market that actually is the target audience,
okay,
like it's not gonna work, you know? Like people aren't gonna, I don't know. That's what I think, at least. I think that there's I think that for me, I think there's a market for everything.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But I think it's a matter of tapping into it and acknowledging the fact that it's there. Yeah. But if you don't acknowledge the fact that it's there, it's just, it's not there. It's non-existent to you.
Yeah, so just drawing attention to it more.
Yeah. Exactly.
Needs to be a thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So from there, I know all over in Europe, and I eventually want to get to your time in River here, but what other teams did you end up jumping over to?
So after KR, I was, like, super stoked about, like, kind of getting back to the U.S. because I had a boyfriend at the time who was in Orlando, and I was like, perfect opportunity. Let me go play in Orlando because I like my, like, little amount of time that I spent there in regards to my rehab, in regards to, like, training. I thought it was a good environment. So I went to Orlando, and, yeah, I was there for the year. I didn't play, but it was really tough on me in regards to that. But I like being surrounded by such talented individuals such as like Marta and Alex and like Ashlyn and Allie. Like, I mean, it was like a good environment to be in for me. It was.
As a player though, don't you think that is really neat? Because at training, you get to see, you know, you might not being seen on the field, but you get to see your talent in comparison to these
people. Exactly. You can see you get a really, really fair gauge about where you're at and what you need to be doing, and if you want to be at the level, what you need. Like, you know, it's a very good gauge to be next to these type of these high caliber players and to understand where you're at in regards to the game. I loved being at Orlando because of the players, but unfortunately didn't get the opportunity to play because clearly the coach didn't like me as much as I wanted him to. And it's clearly the assistant coach, same thing. But I like kind of accepted my role in that team, and I was like in a comfort zone as well because with my boyfriend being there and then we had a dog together, and it was like, and I had like my friend group, like we'd go play board games like Catan, you know.
I'm a big fan of Catan.
I'm a big fan as well. Absolutely. Should have brought it. It was like I was very, very comfort zoned. But I realized, I acknowledged that during that time. I was like, this is not what I want. I'm not happy with this. I'm not playing. Like, this isn't fun for me. And I acknowledged that many times being there. But I didn't want that to, like, ruin my experience there and make my life, like, a living hell.
Yeah.
Per se. But, so it was all... it was like a shift in mindset. That was, like, my slap in the face, like, reality check. Like, sure. Jordan, you don't want to be in this.
Sure.
So after Orlando, I was like, I'm going abroad. And then I went into preseason with Utah. So I didn't end up going abroad, but I like love traveling and I like realized that. And so I was like, after my time with Utah, I didn't end up getting signed at Utah because they had a full roster. It ended up forcing me abroad, which is exactly what I needed. But during the time, this is kind of complicated part. After I didn't get signed with Utah, I got really, my uncle passed away, and I got really, really like bummed out, understandably. I'm close with him, so I got really, really sad about that. And then I like stopped everything that I was doing, and I was like, I don't want to play anymore. And I was like, I don't like this. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I really don't want to do it anymore. I'm like, I'm so over this. I want to do things that I like love. Little did I know, it would bring me right back to soccer.
Sure.
And the opportunity came where, like, I was playing actually here at the base.
Yeah.
I was playing at the base, like, every Monday. Any opportunity somebody would hit me up, I'd be like, yes, of course I'm going to play. And then, like, I would play in Venice, and I would play pickup in Huntington and Orange County and Garden Grove. Like, any opportunity that I could get to play. And I told myself, I was like, you're done playing.
Yeah.
And I tried to cut myself off of it, but I like got involved in street soccer.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, no, I wanted to ask you, because off camera we talked about this. Is there a worry at all? Because at times in my career too, if you have an injury or something like this that you want to nurse, but it's just, you know, agents will tell you or whatever it is about these gaps in your resume. But it sounds like you were just not having fun and you had decided, I'm just going to take a break.
Exactly, So I think for me, I was like, I don't necessarily need to play professionally anymore, right? So I was like, I don't need this anymore. But then I was like, I always come back to the game. Like, the game is what brings me so much joy. Pick up soccer is like my favorite thing in the entire planet. You can probably ask anybody because I try to force people to play all the time.
Okay.
But like for me, like, and especially in regard to agents, I understand agents being like, this gap is going to like ruin your career, X, Y, Z, like all this nonsense. I just think that like your soccer experience is your own, sure, and you can write your own story however you want to. If somebody wants to take off 5 years, if somebody wants to, it's not recommended. Of course it's not recommended. Sure. If you want to take off a year, of course it's not recommended. But if you need to do that for you, do it. Like, who's to say that you can't go back and play? Nobody, nobody can tell your future, and that's your decision in the end. And that's that I think that this game is so beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. It's whatever you make of it. It's whatever you want it to be. So if I want to stop playing tomorrow and I just want to play street soccer, I can do that, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to anybody else but you.
So your advice would be not to worry so much about that. If you need to get your mind right, your body right, or something, you'd suggest go ahead and take
that
it. Time.
Do whatever you need to do in order to be the player that you want to be, or whatever. Like I said, whatever you want your experience to be with this game, do it. Like nobody's stopping you. Yeah. Nobody's story is pre-written. Like, and nobody's experience is the same. So do whatever you need to do.
I think that's super important to hear, though, because it is very hard as a player to crunch that and to be like, oh, I'm going against almost what everyone's saying. Like you said, it's not suggested, but if you need some time.
Do whatever you need
to do. Yeah.
Exactly.
So you end up street soccer,
completely
as much as you
full
can.
Force, exactly. Okay. Actually enjoying myself to like the core of me. It brings me so much joy to play here, anywhere, honestly, like anytime. Like you could be like, oh, let's go play outside, and I'd probably be like, heck yes, let's do it. But yeah. So it's like for me, playing that like brought back my passion, my joy, my everything that like I felt like I was missing. And it reminded me, my uncle really lived his life to the fullest and did whatever he wanted to do. And it didn't matter what everybody else wanted to do. It's just, he did what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. That's what I take from his life. And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Like, I love traveling and I love playing. So I'm like, I'm going to do my best to include the two. Yeah.
Was it here at Urban Futsal that you got introduced eventually to Tango League even?
So I saw Tango before from my friends Pedro and Steven Mendoza. Okay. I saw them in Tango and I was like, oh my god, that looks so rad. I was like, I need to be a part of this. I was like, I can create a team that's gonna kick butt, of course.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I like saw an opportunity for Tango here and I was like super hyped about it because I was like, oh yes, like, yeah. And I didn't realize the whole process to like be able to play in it.
Okay.
Yes. I had no idea.
So maybe a lot of people don't know what Tango is. Explain that whole thing.
Okay, Tango is it's this street soccer league where it's like a kind of like an invitational as well, where you take where is it? It's like eight to ten teams, I feel like, and they like put them in like a round robin type deal where you play, and winner stays on, winner goes on. Essentially, it's like a tournament style. Okay. But yeah, it's like you enter a team of five people. It's a bit different now, but when I was doing it, that's exactly what it was. Okay. So you can have a roster of up to 10. Okay. I tried to put 10, but none of my people showed up because they were all working. So I had five on my team, I believe, the day of. So.
And is this purely for fun? Is there money on the line?
I mean,
what do you got?
I thought it was purely for fun. I just think it's like, for me, the base is like a really cool space to play in. It's like always a good vibe. It's always a good vibe and like a good time. And so I saw that it was here and I was like, is this close by? I was like, I can do this. And we have to like register online. And I tried to register and I couldn't do it. I never was able to actually register. So I ended up like calling eight people that I knew from Adidas and like miscellaneous like other avenues to try and figure out how to get into this big tournament, because I was like, my team's going to win.
Okay.
And I was being arrogant and a little butthead about it, but like I just kept telling everyone, I was like, I need to be in this tournament. I was like, I have a team, it's this team, it's our, everybody else is on the app besides me, because I can't get on it for some reason. And yeah, it ended up like working out, and then like I brought my team here and we were playing, started out as 5v5, and then like I think it was 5v5, and then a pipe burst and so they cut the field in half, so then it was 3v3. And then we played, and I did not realize what was on the line. I didn't realize that like a trip to Russia to go to the World Cup was on the line. Wow. I failed to realize that until like halfway through the tournament.
And I've seen you travel with them, so you end up going to this.
Yeah, I ended up, we ended up going to the final, and then we lost in the final off of a sketchy goal. It didn't count. For me, it didn't count, but whatever.
Tournament MVP here, though, right?
Yeah, well, like, okay, so there was five judges. Okay. Five judges. Two voted for me, one voted for another guy on my team, and two voted for the guy on the other team.
Okay.
And because the other team won, the other guy won, but he didn't have a passport. So then they called me and they're like, hey, Jordan, you want to go? You tied for MVP. So, and I was like, yeah, of course I went. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I want to go to Russia to go see World Cup. I was like, this is bucket list thing for me. So I ended up like going to Russia and competing against 22 other dudes from all over the dudes because it was.
So how many women are in this?
Me.
Just you.
Just me. Me and a bunch of brothers.
I think this is so amazing as far as the storyline, because just from your youth story, I'm hearing you playing your brother. This is a norm to you. Yeah. When I see you on the field, too, I'm a pretty rough guy. and I hate to say it, but when I'm up against her, I don't hold nothing back just because I know the competitor you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that you do that. So.
As we should, though, right?
Yeah, like, no, 100%.
You hold your own. Mm-hmm. And so how did you feel as far as you representing women in this league and getting stuff like, nominated in the finals for...
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was an incredible feeling. And I felt... an obligation to represent us appropriately, because I do believe that women can play with men. I'm not saying that like we're gonna be able to play 11 aside like professional, like I'm not saying that. I'm saying that in regards to a five aside game, when it's 5v5 and there's professional, I played professionally, so it's like it just doesn't, like if I'm playing against people who don't necessarily play professionally, I mean I should be able to hold my own.
Sure.
You know. Yeah. And like people's experience with the game, I mean whoever you're surrounded by, you step up your level to match theirs. You always do. So it's a challenging environment, but I think that especially professional women's players are more than capable of it.
Yeah.
And being like a standout person in regards to like playing this, and I grew up playing like indoor and futsal and everything. So I should be good at it. Sure. I should be better than majority of males that I play against. Like that's how it should be. But I mean, I'm not saying everybody, like this goes along for everybody, but I think that for me, it was like a serious obligation to represent appropriately.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome to hear. And I often find in my experience, it's just women are even more technical at times on certain stuff. And it's just like, it's a different game, maybe, just as far as speed or whatever, but as far as skill there, it's
exactly. I mean, I'm not, exactly. Yeah. I'm not trying to say that I'm as strong as any, because I ended up, when I was competing in Russia against, like, the dudes, it was, like, I was, like, a bunch of different competitions, like, skills, like, tricks, like, and playing, and then 1v1s, like, everything. And I mean, it is, it's a lot of skill. I'm not saying I'm gonna beat a 6 feet tall man, like in regards to like bodying him off a ball, you know, but I mean, there's a definite possibility I could meg him and make him look a little bit dumb. So.
And how did they like that? Cause I'm sure that
they're not fans of that. Yeah. They don't like that at all. Yeah. Oh yeah. But it's fun though. It's definitely so much fun. It makes you feel good. You're like, ah, gotcha.
Yeah. Well, that's an awesome experience representing for the ladies out there.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
You got to experience the whole World Cup, you go into games, all that.
Coolest thing ever. Yeah. I got to see Croatia and England, which is like a dream for me because my family goes back to England. We lost. So that was rough. But, and then we got to see the final, which was incredible. France and Croatia, which was unreal. But yeah, no, it was like the coolest, literally one of the cool. I say this all the time, like about every experience, I'm like, nothing's gonna top this, and then something does. Exactly. And so when I was in Russia, I got a phone call from my agent, Lenny at the time, and he goes, hey Jordan, like, do you want to play for Champions League? Oh no, it wasn't Lenny, sorry. We're gonna have to scratch that. I'm not gonna say the other agent because he's a terrible person.
We're adding all of this. No, just kidding.
I get a call from my agent at the time, and he goes, "Do you want to play in Norway for a Champions League team with your best friend?" And I was like, "Of course.
Of course.
Like, why would I? Yeah. Like, why would I even question that?" And that was with Jamia Fields, and I was like, "Of course I want to do this. Like, me and Jamia in Norway is like, it's gonna be the best experience ever." And yeah, so I ended up officially like signing a contract to go play in Norway while I was in Russia.
Wow.
So that's crazy. And it's just crazy how it, and I was like, I'm done playing. And then like that,
all this
happened. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then I go to Norway, I sign everything. And I go back to the US for a couple of days. So yeah, I go from Russia to Norway, then Norway to California for 3 days. Then I return to Norway for season. For Champions League, and then immediately, as soon as I get there, we go to Croatia to do qualifiers against Sporting, and then this other team from Sporting Portugal, and then, Osijek, a team from Croatia, and then another team from Serbia. Okay. So we play against all these teams in order to make it technically into Champions League, and then we made it. We're top team.
So been to a World Cup final, watched that, just playing now on a Champions League team. This is crazy different, especially from coming from that first contract.
Mm-hmm.
So from any player that's in a rough time right now, I just want them to realize the opportunity
absolutely
that does seek, and if you just stay involved like you did, persevere.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I could have been defeated at any point during these times, but I think it's all perspective. Because obviously you go through tough times, but also like I think along the way I've met some incredible people that have also allowed me to like gain perspective that like this isn't the end and this isn't like stopping my career from moving forward, you know.
Yeah.
But if I allow it to stop my career, then obviously it's dead.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let anything stand in the way of what I want to do. And like I said, I want to travel and I want to play. And I want to play on like a high scale, and I want to play for amazing clubs, and I want to be a part of amazing history and culture.
Yeah.
Like that's for me, that's like icing on the cake. It's the most important thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you're playing Champions League games.
Yep.
And where do we go from there?
Oh, goodness gracious. So there, I mean, it's freezing in Norway, and I'm not a cold weather person.
Me neither.
Not a cold weather person.
Us Southern California kids. Under what, 70?
Yeah.
70 is cool?
It's a nightmare, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I'm here. I'm like bundled up. Are you kidding me? I brought a sweatshirt in here because I needed
just
in case.
I got my jacket on.
But yeah, no, I went to Norway. It was snowing. I was like, this is not okay. But I was with my best friend, so that was cool.
Suffer together.
Yeah, suffer together, exactly. Mm-hmm. In Norway, we like are playing in league. I'm having a tough time. I'm not necessarily seeing eye to eye with like the coach. Which happens, like I said before, it happens. She doesn't really like the way that I play because I'm more possession oriented.
Okay.
So yeah, she just really is not a fan of me. So she ends up not playing me like all season long. That happened. That was really, really hard for me to go through, and I was struggling with it a lot at the time. And yeah, so she didn't play me. I only played 2 games while I was there during the whole time. But on the bright side, we didn't win any games. We like only won 2 games, and those were the 2 games that I played in.
Those 2.
Exactly.
Made a difference,
so
my stat
was amazing.
Exactly.
There. But still, I mean, yeah. And also one of those games I scored in. So that's
that
cool.
Is cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was a really tough time, and I literally was like counting down the moments to like leave Norway at one point because I was so frustrated and so unhappy with like the coach, with how they were trying to play, which was like just kicking the ball into the corner, towards the corner flags, and I was like, this is
same
awful
style.
Because we had a really talented team.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't make sense for us to play this style when we have like South Korea's national, like I mean captain of their national team.
Wow.
Her name's Cho. She's amazing. She's playing at West Ham now.
Okay.
And another like Cameroon's like captain, Gail Ngannamwit, and she's like, she was playing at Malaga? Yeah. She's playing in Spain. Like, it's just crazy. All these, and then we had 2 starters, or not starters, like 2 players for Brazil's national team that were on that team. How are we not successful?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. But these are like the incredibly talented individuals, and yeah, and so it just like nothing didn't make sense to me. And that reflected upon the coach, but yeah, that was my experience there, and I was like, I can't wait to leave. But I loved my team. I loved my teammates. They were incredible people and so talented, and training was fun with them. But yeah, so I ended up leaving Norway after season was officially done. What did we do? I'm like trying to think. And then after that, I decided, I was like, you know what? I just want to like kind of take it easy. I'm like, I mean, I'm talking to other teams, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. And then like the Tango League thing evolved. And so like when I was in Russia, I was competing to be on Tango Squad, which is like the team.
Okay.
Which is a YouTube series.
Okay.
And so I ended up getting on Tango Squad, signing a contract with Adidas for Tango Squad. And so what the situation is with them is, like, we travel to locations all around the world, and there's 12 people on the team, so it's me and 11 other dudes.
Wow.
Always. So it's literally like I'm traveling with 11 brothers at all times, but then we'd also, like, add more to the group in each location that we were in.
Okay.
And
just locals on the spot? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The ones that played in Tango League.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we go to these really rad locations. For example, like, we went to Spain, went to Madrid, and I got to meet Isco, and yeah, like, I have no words. I literally have no words. Like, the coolest thing ever. And Xavi Alonso, yeah. Like, it was so rad. Like, I still can't believe, like, I met them like that. Got to, like, chill with them. And that was, yeah, I don't, and, like, got to train with them. But yeah, so we, like, go to, like, environments like Real Madrid's training ground, and then we would train, and then we'd play against a team from Madrid. We played against a team called, I think it was Santa Ana is what they were called. Yeah, so we played against them, and 11-a-side, and then we'd do, like, a Tango League event where we played 5-a-side in, like, in their cool, like, environment that they create, whatever the base is in that city.
Sure.
So, yeah, so we'd go around the world, and we'd be doing that, and it was literally, like, it seemed like my life wasn't real, because it'd be like a trip a month, and we would go and just play and
for
enjoy.
A while there, I just saw you traveling so much, just all these cool places. Like,
so
dang, just doing it.
Literally, it was the coolest thing ever, and I mean, I'm forever grateful for, like, that experience and that time, and, like, the people who I got to meet, and how close I am with all those dudes. They're all, like, family to me now. Like, I can go around the world and go stay with any one of them and feel totally comfortable. I love them all so much.
So as far as experience goes, from any of the professional teams you've played on to that, like, is there a greater feeling one or the other, or was it comparable? Like, what did you enjoy as far as just playing? Because it really sounds like you as a person just enjoy the soccer. So
I do, yeah, and that's exactly what it is. There's no BS in regards to, like, with Tango, there wasn't any BS. And, like, I mean, people would think because I'm on a team filled with men, that, like, the level of respect wasn't there, or that they didn't agree with me being on the team, or somebody would complain about that, right? Like, that could be a thought in somebody's head. But, like, the amount of respect that I received from each and every one of the dudes and the treatment from across the board was absolutely incredible in regards to that environment. And I really did love my experience with Tango. I would say probably the most in regards to, like, as a whole. But it's also very different. It's a very different thing. I'm not with a team every single day training.
Sure.
You know? So I would say, like, there's bits and pieces of Tango that I absolutely loved, and then there's other teams that I've been with, and I just love my experience just because of the players that I'm surrounded by. You know, so it's different.
Yeah.
Depends on where I was at.
And that is funny, too, because that's what a lot of players end up missing about the game, is just the day-to-day shooting the shit around, you know, the locker room or whatever. So that being different, did you just travel together and end up playing?
We traveled, in essence, because I'm coming from one of the furthest places. The guy from Brazil, his name's Kelvin, and Kay, who's from Japan, we would come in early. So we'd have a couple extra days together, and we'd get to hang out and, like, explore the city and kind of get acclimated. Or everybody else is, like, coming in, like, the day before or, like, the day of kind of situation. But, yeah, I don't know.
So get into Tango.
Yeah.
I know there's a few more places in Europe, but I eventually want to get to. So just most recently, you had the championship here in LA.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, different league back in America.
Yeah.
Let's walk us through it.
So while my voice. Oh, wow. Sorry about that.
I'll take a drink, too.
Yeah, same.
Brought to you by.
I'm dead. So, yeah. So with Tango, I was able, I, like, played locally for Orange County Galaxy, which was really cool that I was able to, like, come back and play 11-a-side with, like, a women's team and have training while, like, I was traveling with Tango.
Okay. So yeah. I was able to do both.
But I mean, whenever it was a Tango thing, I would go for Tango.
Okay.
But yeah. So whenever I come back, I would play with, like, there's some ex-pros, some current pros, actually, that were on that team, and then some college players. So it was a really good environment. Like, pretty high level of training and like awesome coaches as well. We had two guys from UCI, Scott and PJ, and they were amazing. So, and they're like really understanding. So, yeah. And they created a really, really good environment for everybody.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so after that, I want to talk. So now you're currently playing for River.
Yes.
And this is one of the biggest teams in the world, has to be, as far as their, you know, biggest matchup too, one of the biggest. So I've heard this story about Ubers or whatever they call them there, and I want you to repeat this story because it's just hilarious. Talking about the rivalry, you know, one of the biggest ones I watch all the time, right, is Barcelona-Real Madrid.
Yes.
But as far as history, as far as like, what you told a story also about, like, just the people that come out to support this. I've seen the craziest photos of this rivalry. Hey, tell us about this.
It is actually gnarly. I have no words for the, like, the environment that they create, the atmosphere and everything before games. It's just like, what? It's like, it's a different world. It really is. And it's incredible to be a part of it. It's like an absolute privilege. I've never been so submersed in such an amazing, like, football culture in my entire life. And so I'm like, and I was at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, I was at the World Cup and, like, Argentina is just a different world.
Oh, wow.
It's a different world.
So what's going on that makes it so different?
The passion. Literally, like, I think Argentinians, in regards to everything that they do, they're incredibly passionate. Okay. And so when they are all in on something, they're absolutely all in. And you can feel it. Like, being next to them when they're talking about, like, when you're talking to a fan of River, you feel their exactly. And it's, like, contagious. And you're excited. You're like, oh, yeah. Like, I don't know nearly as much as you do, but I'm, like, I'm excited and I want to be a part of this. And, I think that you feel that in regards to everything that they're doing. But, like, football is, like, next level for them. The way that, like, for example, I'll tell my Uber story now.
Okay.
So one day, I mean, majority of the days, in the first few days that I was there, I decided it was a good decision to take Ubers because I don't know public transportation. Sure. And I didn't know if it was safe. And I was, like, really suspect in regards to everything. And I take an Uber and I'm going to this, like, more touristy area, and I'm, like, super stoked about it because there's, like, coffee shops that I want to go to, and I'm, like, kind of openly talking about the fact that I'm playing for River, and which is a bad idea. And so,
just like
one
of the biggest things you could be doing in this town. I'm no big timer.
And so the guy's, like, talking to me about everything and, like, how's it going. And I'm like, he's like, what are you doing here? Are you studying? Are you, like, studying? And this is in Spanish, by the way. And he's like, are you studying? And I was like, no, I'm, like, playing football here. And he goes, like, oh, okay, cool. For who? And I was like, yeah, I'm playing for River. And he goes, like, and he, like, touches the, you know, like, the rear view mirror?
The
rear mirror has, like, things that dangle from it. He has Boca beads dangling, and he's like, get out of my car. And I'm like, this is happening. I was like, no, it's okay. I don't know. I don't understand the rivalry. I swear I don't understand.
I'm a good person.
I swear I'm a good person. I just got here, like, this week. Like, please give me a break. And no, he kicked me out of the car, and that happened two times.
So it's happened twice.
It happened twice, and then I realized I am a student. I am no longer. I don't play football anymore.
Yeah, you can't claim that.
I don't play for River. I'm a student, and I came here to study Spanish.
Wow. That's it. So and what happens too? So you're on the street. You just gotta get yourself another one.
Get another one. Get a cab. Like, that was the option. Off in a random place though? But I, like, kind of.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, it's, I mean, not great. You know, it wasn't great.
What were these people's ratings? Was there a rating system?
He was good. He had a 4.97.
Oh, man. That's got to drop after your experience.
100%. I think I forgot to rate him. And I also was kind of scared. So,
so, as far as safety.
He definitely rated me low.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's rough out there.
Yeah, it is.
So, as far as safety, though, as a woman traveling over there, I have also heard, though, you've been treated exceptionally well.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, so, absolutely. In regards to, like, the community and the people there and everything like that, everybody's very warming. But it also might be because I have blonde hair and blue eyes. This might be a little bit of the reason why people are nice to me. Okay. I clearly am foreign.
The American.
Very American.
So I asked this question because you grew up in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Hispanic neighborhood, and for whatever reason, I was known as like the gringo. Or I'm sure you've heard this word.
I have.
Gringa. Yeah. And like, it wasn't necessarily a positive thing at all. And
so,
is there a...
The term there that I've been referenced in the media as is Yankee.
The Yankee.
Yankee, which is not a term, I mean, it's definitely not a term of endearment by any means, but it's like... Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a fan of it, but I mean, it is what it is. I can't, like, I'm not going to get all angry about it. It is what it is.
So even though you're treated well as a player, do other, maybe even players on your team or something, have this, does any of them have a hostile kind of thing of like, oh, this Yankees here? Or is it more just
I don't, with my team, no. My team is like the most, like, I mean, they're crazy, and I love them so much. They're literally, like, the most entertaining bunch you'll ever meet in your entire life. Okay. That's for sure. There's never a dull moment. That's an understatement. Okay. Yeah, but they're literally, as soon as I got there, they, like, I mean, of course, me being very hesitant, but also I'm a very open person, but in Spanish, it's so much more difficult. But since I've gotten so much better with the language, everybody's been, like, everybody is super open to me. They've always been super open to me, but now it's, like, a next level. I'm actually, like, developing, like, lifelong friendships here and, like, creating, I mean, I'm able to understand them, and, yeah, it's been a big turnaround since the beginning, because obviously going through everything at the beginning when I first got here, or here to Argentina, yeah, exactly, and with everything with like my best friend, but like, I mean, everybody was awesome. They've been awesome since the get-go. That's for sure. They've never once treated me differently or anything like that. Yeah.
So it's more so. Does it sound like it's more so just media-wise?
Media-wise, yeah, but honestly, even the media is really positive towards me. Okay. Yeah, it's like the only negative term is like Yankee, but it can also be interpreted as a positive one.
Yeah, and maybe they just don't understand that, you know, maybe they do. I'm just saying, I'm like trying to think positively of it, just like maybe they don't use it as that negative term.
Yeah, true. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it depends on who you're talking to about it.
And well, I just translated one of the interviews you had, and just seeing how it translated, I'm sure there
what
is
did
a...
you translate? Which one did you translate?
I don't know. I saw the two. So according with the video that you had, the Uber interview, I translated some article, and it was just like the way it read was just like completely different. So I'm thinking their understanding of the word Yankee might be just different too.
Yeah, man, it's been a definite possibility.
Thinking positive.
And that's the thing, is there's so many different words that are like up for interpretation, for everybody's interpretation. Yeah. You're like, one word can be positive for one person, and one thing can be negative for another one. So like, when somebody, there's a word that I've learned there, and it's called Baluda.
Baluda.
Yeah. Okay. Or, yeah, and it's like the style in which like, I mean, it's like an Argentinian word, but also I interpreted it as a bad word. Originally, I interpreted it as a bad word, and I like asked my teammate, I was like, don't say that word. And they're like, no, Jordan, it's not. It's like, we're saying it as like a friendly term, but they're like, but don't use it. Like, don't use it normally. But like, we use it as like a positive term. And I was like, and I'm like, okay, but I'm not going to use it still. Okay. So, exactly.
I'd heard you scoping out coffee shops. Any Brazilian, or I mean not Brazilian, Argentinian barbecues you found, or what's...
Okay, so I was vegan until I went to Argentina, and then I realized it's way too difficult to be vegan in Argentina, so I still try to maintain like primarily vegan, but I have to venture into vegetarian occasionally.
Okay.
Just due to my, like, I mean, I don't necessarily cook as much as I would like to while I'm there, but anyways, yeah, so during the time that I'm there, I live in a house with like a bunch of other people, and they have like an asado night, and it was absolutely incredible, the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life, and it had like a ton of meat, and I like don't eat meat, and I like tried a little piece of it though, my stomach was killing me afterwards, but I mean I felt like I needed to do it in order for like the experience,
because
I really like wherever I go I like to like submerge myself in like the culture and the experience and whatnot, but like so I was like I have to try this, and I like tried it, and I was like this is really good, but my stomach doesn't agree with it, and also this came from an animal, so I feel really bad, but yeah.
Do they cater? Do the restaurants cater towards, you know, vegan and?
No, not really. Yeah. It's like a newer. It's definitely a really, really new thing there. There's a couple of them that kind of do it, but majority no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as we've heard, you have an entertaining bunch over there. I'm not sure if we've dove into. I know when I was discussing certain things, as far as stories behind the scenes, what else can you share as far as, you know, these entertaining stories with maybe a player. You don't have to name any names, okay, but we want to hear some good stuff of your experience.
So there was one thing in the media that like they kept writing about, and it's like que pegada tiene Jordan. I need to think of what it was, but it was like what's all over the media, and it's like what a shot Jordan has. Like she's like a sick shot.
Yeah.
And there's a girl on my team. Her name's Betty, and I love her. I love her so much, and she's so funny. This is like if you can imagine a person that's like everybody's dead. Everybody's like trying to sleep, like on a bus, and she's just there, just like dancing, cumbia, and like screaming, and she has like the loudest voice, and she's awesome. I love her so much, but she always screams at training, que pegada tiene Jordan, like all the time, and like the way she pronounces my name is incorrect but hilarious as well. So it's like she says this all the time, and everybody just starts like laughing every time she does it.
So you have the statement now that's just stuck with you.
Yeah, and that she just says it all the time because like I'm known for having a good shot, and so it's like it's constantly said at training all the time, and I'm like, and what do I say to her? I'm like, Betty, I'm gonna kill you, like every single time, but I'm saying it to her in Spanish. But yeah.
So since I read you absolutely love giving interviews in Spanish.
That's my favorite thing ever.
No, she doesn't. But let's hear. So anything we need to learn or know, and what's like usable? Are you like grocery level, or are you like?
Oh, I'm definitely grocery level. I'm definitely like am able to say no. I don't need a bag. Like,
yeah.
Then they ask if you need a bag. Like I don't need a bag. The thing is how I am normally as a person is like I overshare. I overshare all the time. It's a problem.
It's good.
And so like you know when somebody's like how are you normally, and then like somebody's like good or bad. I'm normally like you know I'm actually pretty bad. Like this happened. Like my dog actually did this today. He ripped my like shirt, my favorite shirt. I'm like I like overshare everything.
Okay.
In Spanish, same thing. It's bad. So like somebody's like todo bien, and then like I'm like. No, and everything is not totally bien. And then I explain, I'm like, actually today I'm late because of this reason, because I accidentally put on the wrong shoe, and I'm like explaining this in Spanish, but like nobody wants to hear.
Sure.
In English, they
sure.
don't want to hear.
Sure.
In Spanish, they don't want to hear, but I'm still explaining it.
Yeah.
So I'm at that level where I can complain about my day.
It probably makes you better in Spanish because you have to think of more vocab to explain this stuff
with. Exactly. I mean, and I the word that I probably say the most, and this is because I had a roommate. This is kind of complicated. She's from Switzerland but lived in Costa Rica for 2 years. So she's fluent in Spanish, and her name's Sara, and she's just like an incredible person. But she always said the word mal all the time.
Mal,
and so like
yeah.
I... literally all the time I'm like screaming, I'm like es mal, and then like everybody always corrects me because it's not es mal, it's está mal. And so like I'm always saying that, especially when it's like I'm always doing it in a joking manner.
Sure.
But everybody looks at me like I'm crazy all the time when I'm doing that, and then like in our group message everybody writes it all the time to make fun of me. But it's fun. But it's just all good fun, and I know it, so it's fine.
So you guys halfway through the season here, or are you guys just wrapped?
Yeah, we just finished halfway through the season. We go back, and we actually have a small tournament, and like a tournament within our tournament. It's weird because it's called Torneo Rexona, and that's what it's like a league, but it's like a tournament. It's like a really long tournament. It's like an eight month long tournament. It's our league, so it's kind of weird. Yeah, it's a complicated like thing, but that's exactly what it is. And then we have another little mini tournament within our tournament.
So
when we get back.
So at some point there's teams that advance, and then or is it just
so it's like the it's kind of like it's like a it's a literally it's a league.
Okay.
It is a league, but it's called a tourneo.
Okay,
so it's called a tournament, but it's not a tournament.
Got it.
It's so complicated.
That's interesting.
So unnecessary. What am I going to do? I'm not Argentinian. I have no pull on saying why they called it a tournament.
Yeah, true. And so you go back when?
I go back on January 8th.
Okay, and how's the team doing? And
we're doing good. I think we're third place right now.
Third place?
That sounds right. Third, fourth, maybe.
And
we're doing well.
Will the winner be decided by just overall points, or will you actually play?
I think they'll have like a playoff, is what I would imagine.
And did you just get to experience your first true rivalry, or have you not experienced that yet?
So this is kind of complicated. So Boca River games,
you
can't go to them. Does that make sense? Like if you're a visitor, you can't go to them. So at Boca games, it's only Boca fans.
Oh, got it. So, because it's too hostile?
Exactly. It's too crazy. And the fans are that passionate to the point where, like, you literally cannot be in the same environment. Yeah, and it's quite wild to say the least.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, so when we played against the first game of season, I wasn't able to play because I didn't have my Migraciones papers finished. I had to sit in the Bombonera. I had to sit in one of the boxes. And at that game, no River Plate fans were allowed. And that was our games. That was a women's game. Whoa. And it was only Boca. It was only Boca fans.
And we filling these stadiums up and everything. Like,
it was the bottom half that was filled up, but they are so loud and so in sync, and all the chants and all the songs and everything, and everybody just knows it. It's incredible. The craziest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
That's so nuts.
Yeah, exactly. And it's for women. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever, and I love being a part of that, but I hated the fact that we lost so badly. But and it was hard to watch because I wanted to be a part of it. But but still, it was really cool. It was a really cool environment. But recently I got to experience my first River Plate game where they played San Lorenzo, which is a good game as well, but they ended up losing, so it was unfortunate. But it was on the year anniversary of when they beat Boca in the Copa Libertadores final. Yeah, and so it was the 1 year anniversary, and so they had this massive celebration. It was just incredible because for the first part of the game, I sat down in the fan section. I was singing, I know some songs, so I was like singing some of the songs, some of the bad songs that I shouldn't sing, but I was singing them anyways because it was like, this is my moment.
Yeah.
And so I was like super, super stoked and I was singing them super loud. And then like I went to another side of the stadium, same situation. Everybody, I thought this would be more mellow, not more mellow at all. It's the same exact environment. Everybody singing, everybody dancing, and everybody's stoked like on life about a win from a year ago. A year ago, and they're celebrating like it was today. It was amazing. It was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that is neat that you mentioned that, because not often do players get that fan view at it. And would you say, because I heard a story too where maybe you just roamed out into, I don't know if it was the fans or whatever. You seem very brave, by the way.
Yeah.
But how is that? Because I only had an experience once in Germany. I actually went to and sat in the fan section and just got completely into it. And it was so cool.
How was it for you? It was good?
For me, it was great. But I didn't know when I would ever put myself in that scenario here in the States or not. You know, like, it's just, I don't know. I feel odd. Because I'm kind of shy to talk to a whole bunch of people. But tell me your experience just getting out there and just...
See, I feel like I'm not at all in regards to that. Like, for me, I think it's just like a brilliant opportunity to be in Buenos Aires, living there, playing for River. Like, it's just, for me, it's such a privilege. And so for me, missing any opportunity to like submerge myself in the culture, like I'll get really angry with myself.
Yeah.
So, and that goes for being a part of like La Hincha. Like, it's important for me to like go and experience everything with them, because first of all, those are the people that like really support me as well.
That's
so
awesome.
I want to support them as well.
Sure.
I want to support them and I want to support the club. And for me, going and being a part of their craziness and la locura, the madness, it's just like, it's the most amazing thing for me, because I really feel a part of the club. And the thing is we had training right before I went into the craziness of the crowd. I like saw them from inside the stadium, and they were waiting for like our men's team to leave. And I was like, I'm gonna go do that. And I was like talking with some of my teammates, and I was like, you guys wanna come with me? I was like, let's go. And they're like, nobody's like, no Jordan, we're not gonna. I'm like, okay, whatever, suit yourself. I'm gonna go grab my film camera and I'm gonna go.
Sure.
And so then I just go, and I'm just like, I literally am just like there and just like in awe, staring at all the people and all their, how they're all chanting and all. And like, I'm just like, this is, seriously. And everybody's been waiting there for hours.
Yeah.
Absolute hours. Just waiting to get a glimpse of these men. And I'm just like, this is crazy to me. But I love it and I think it's amazing. And everybody that like recognized me, that they all like were super, like they were amazed that I was out there with them. And I was like, honestly, like it's just amazing for me to even be able to be here with like you guys. And I don't know, I think all around is just like such a, I will never forget that experience in my entire life.
What a neat experience that is too, because, you know, America's got to get on it, right? But,
absolutely.
But just culturally, it's different.
Yeah.
But what I think so neat about your experience is you're so much of a fan of the culture while they're loving you as a player too. And I feel like both of you are just being able to celebrate each other.
Exactly.
To the
it's
max.
Like it's like an excitement and excitement because they're excited to see me and I'm so excited to see them. Like, and then it's like, I don't know, it's like a circular thing because they're like excited to see me and then just like hyping each other up. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's like the coolest thing ever, really. And it's just like, for me, it's like being a part of the history of such a amazing club with, I don't know, it's just so cool.
Yeah, I do think that's neat just because you're treated a certain way in America, and maybe you do have the facilities and this and that, but culturally maybe it's a little bit different.
Definitely.
Explain to me the difference, maybe, facility, you guys are a huge club.
Yeah.
How is that like, though? And, like, is there a different treatment that the women get?
Yeah, so the treatment is definitely different. It's really interesting because the support is the same, but the treatment is totally different. Like, the men train at, they train about, I think it's like, 45 minutes away at this place called Aziza. It's where the airport is, and it's incredible, the field and everything. They have like, I think they have like 10 fields, probably more, really nice ones. But we train inside the stadium on a turf field that's quite terrible, to say the least. And it's really, really hard on your body, and we're there every single day during the week. So, and I'm old, like I'm 27. Like I can't necessarily handle this type of how everything's set up there. It's just not meant for sustainability in regards to like playing wise. That it's definitely not the same. And like our gear, like we don't get new gear. Like I don't have a jersey with my number on it or my name on the back of it. So, and I change jerseys every game depending on what position I'm playing. So it's starting 11, get the starting 11 numbers based on position. You don't get to choose. You never get to choose what you want. When fans ask you, they're like, hey, like what's your jersey? What's your jersey number? Like I want to get it. And I literally am like, I can't tell you.
So does that mean too, there's no name on the back?
There's no nothing. And the thing is I like wanted to put proof out there that like there is value in it and that like people are willing to buy it. So I put polls on like my social media and I ended up getting, I think a total of, I think it's like eight to 10,000 total people that want my jersey. They want my jersey with my name on it, with my number. Don't have that, but like the proof is there. Like there is a market for women's soccer and for the jersey, it just hasn't happened.
Just an idea, business partner.
Yeah, right.
You make your own dang jersey.
Exactly. Okay? I'm just gonna draw it. I'm just gonna draw it on the t-shirt.
Not branded or anything. Just same colors, and you put your damn name on it, and you get those 8,000 people.
This is true, because nobody's gonna recognize me because I'm not the only like super blonde out there.
We gotta get these people these jerseys.
Absolutely, and I think that that's really important because I think that my team deserves it. Like, they're professional players. Their ability is there. They need to be treated like their profession. All around, the treatment from the field to the jerseys to the training gear to cleats, everything.
Sure.
Need the full on treatment. There's no, excuse my language, but there's no half-assing this.
Yeah.
When you decide to go play, be professional, you have to treat it as if it's professional. Because if you don't, then it's shown as that to everybody else. If you, like, for example, like if they brought soccer to the U.S., right? This is before like the big blow up of like women's soccer here.
Mm-hmm.
Say they brought it here. They said entrance was free. They don't have numbers on their jerseys. Like, what does that say to you? What is that registered? There's no value. Obviously, there is value. You create value with like how you display it. If everything's free and everything's just given, then like then it shows that there is no value in it. But if you show that you have to pay something to come watch, if you show that they have jerseys with names on it, like it shows that there's value in what you're doing and that you believe in it more than anything.
Sure.
You know, and I think that will like follow through along the line of like everybody else in regards to like fans, in regards to like clubs, in regards to other clubs. It would be like an amazing effect, I think, within Argentina. But I mean, they haven't done that yet, so it's like, but some clubs have, but not all of them.
Yeah, I'd like to see that come to fruition while your time is there, hopefully.
That'd be nice.
You know?
This but new year, 2020.
But I think there is a process there, especially with businesses work, right? Like, for example, look at our first contracts.
Yeah.
just for the love of the game or whatever. Yeah. But within the time and seeing how much of a big club this is and with the backing and everything, you'd like to think that that could be a very easy bridge to jump.
Very easy. Don't you think? Very easy. I wish I had like the answer, you know. I don't know what the problem is. I've like talked about ideas to change things, but
well, I think you'd be the best person to ask, and we've learned so much about you tonight. And, but I guess my biggest topic I do want to hear is just as far as being a woman and you playing on women's teams and then you having that experience with playing with so many men too. Do you at all feel like you're treated differently based on the scenario you're in, or do you see that one is treated better in a certain situation? How do you feel about that?
So I see that, I mean, within men's teams, I understand that men have come a really long way in regards to MLS and everything like that. And I understand it's been over a period of a long span of time.
Yes.
I understand that, and I respect that. I do think we're in different times now, and I think that growth has been more rapid than anything. And so I think that the growth is capable of being like within years, rather than within like a multitude of years, exactly a decade. I think it can be done. Actually, I think it can be done within months, but like I think years is more realistic to say. But I think that the change that people are asking for in regards to like treatment of like women and everything like that, I think it's possible really, really rapidly. Because I think the men's treatment, it's there now, right? Mm-hmm. It's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Yes.
I'm not a man. I'm not in it.
Within the last, so 08 was when I started with MLS. And within that time, leaps and bounds.
Exactly.
So,
and then now we're in 2019, about to go into 2020. And I think that, I think that the men, I think that the treatment in regards to that is way better right now. I think that the women is making great accolades. Especially in regards because of the U.S. women's national team. Mm-hmm. They've demonstrated the fact that they deserve it. My experience with treatment wise playing with men been amazing. I've obviously been subjected to people discriminating against the fact that I'm a woman, but I do my talking with my feet and I get them to shut up in that way.
Yeah.
And then when people doubt me, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You can doubt me all you want, but when I play, it's gonna show something different. But it's crazy because my experience with women's team, I experience more discrimination in regards to playing with the women's team.
With the women.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking. Now that I've never even thought about it like that, but you brought up this point.
Yeah. Do you mean player to player? What do you?
Not player to player, but club wise.
Club wise.
Yeah, I think within the club, I think that player to player, I think it's always amazing.
True.
I think because we all know what we're going through, which is all
true.
It's all crap.
Yeah.
And but in regards to.
This is funny. It's all crap.
It's all crap.
You're in the same struggle is what she means. There.
Exactly. No, it's not all crap. Sorry. We all know the same struggle. Sure. Exactly. Yeah, we all absolutely know the same struggle because we're all going through it, and we're all going through it right now, and we're all in it all the time. Mm-hmm. So we're able to support each other in that sense. But it's interesting because I think it's the perspective from the clubs in regards to what they think that we deserve. And some don't think we deserve anything, and some think that we do deserve something. I will say, the best treatment that I've ever experienced in regards to women's soccer is the small amount of time that I was at Utah Royals. The treatment was absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. And that's because the owner sees value in women's soccer. He sees value in his players, and it goes down from everything, the treatment, the coach, everything.
Well, that's great to hear. Would you say that's on par with all of America, or would you say just specifically, you got to even point out specific teams?
I would say Orlando Pride and Utah Royals. Okay. I can only speak from my experience.
Sure, sure.
My experience with the Houston Dash was not a positive one, so I would say no to there. It's probably improved since I've been there, though, so I don't know what it is to this day. But I know from being at Orlando Pride and being at Utah, I know it was that those treatments, it was good. It's what you should expect out of women's soccer and what should be the bare minimum. But the rest of the clubs, I'm not quite sure of. I've heard very bad things about certain places. I'm not going to say them, but I've heard very bad things about them where I think that it's possible to create a better environment for their women's team,
and
which I think will create more people wanting to play, wanting to continue their career.
Were you saying that in the States, or were you
in
just
States.
Saying
okay, in the States okay. and in general honestly okay. in general I think a lot of treatment at a lot of places needs to improve.
So it's basically these choices by the higher ups in clubs.
It's
just
club.
That you
Absolutely,
find interesting.
It's the club. It's them. It's them that decide the value of their women's team. And if you can choose to give it value, or you can choose not to. So,
yeah. Well, I agree with that statement all around. Mm-hmm. You got a self-belief. Hey, if you don't believe in the team, I mean,
exactly.
Where is it
gonna go? Then there's nothing at all. So, yeah.
Well, I feel like we've learned a ton. Is there any other things you'd like to mention, or you could even, shout out your Instagram, tell us how to reach you?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. You can follow me on Instagram at Jordan O'Brien. And if there's honestly ever any advice or anything in regards to like women's soccer, if you just want to have a chat about it, I'm always open to the conversation. So slide into my DMs.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great invitation.
Yeah. Hey, she talks a lot, people. Later. Just know she's going to fill you in with all the good details.
Exactly. You're going to get my honest opinion on everything. That's for sure.
I've really enjoyed talking to you tonight. I've learned a ton about you, and so I hope everybody else did too.
Oh, thank you.